that explanation, certainly unwilling to accept it without proof. Clutching a bucket of dirty water in one hand and the railing with the other, she turned to watch Arin sail the ship, her heart lurching despite the ridiculous cap he wore. What if her life had been dedicated to a lie? Lara was saved from thinking on it further as a wave washed over the deck, rendering her efforts unnecessary. The seas had grown rough, and lifting her face to the sky, she watched as lightning crackled through the clouds, wind tugging at her foolish hat. Arin was skirting the edge of the storm, which was almost upon them. Squinting, Lara took in the shadow of the continent ahead of them. What were the chances they'd make it? Dropping her mop and bucket, she staggered across the rocking deck and up the steps to where Arin stood at the helm. "You need to turn west and get ahead of this typhoon, you mad fool!" she shouted over the wind, gesticulating at the black clouds. "It's just a little storm," he said. "I'll beat it, but you should hold on." Clinging to the railing with one hand and her hat with the other, Lara watched as Ventzia and its sheltered harbor grew on the horizon, barely visible as the rain began to fall. Unlike the day she'd left, the sky over the city of her birth was black and ominous, the whitewashed buildings rising up from the harbor a dull gray. Lording over it all was the Imperial Palace. Its walls washed a brilliant blue, its domes made of bronze. It was where her father kept his harem of wives, one of whom was her mother, if she was still alive. Dimly, she heard Arin order his crew to drop some of the sails, the ship barely slowing as it raced toward the breakwater protecting the harbor. Lightning flashed, and a heartbeat later, thunder shook the ship. Wave after wave swamped the deck, the Ithaconians holding tight to lines to keep from being washed overboard. Only Arin appeared unperturbed. Fighting her growing nausea, Lara dug her fingers into the railing. Surf smashed against the high breakwater like a ceaseless battering ram, froth and spray flying 50 feet in the air. Each time it sounded like an explosion, and sweat poured down her back as she envisioned what would happen to the ship if it ran against the structure. With a grunt of effort, Arin turned the wheel, his gaze fixed on the seemingly tiny gap through which they would pass. A wave rose to nearly the height of the breakwater. "This is insanity!" Lara barely kept her balance as the vessel swung round and straightened, sliding through the gap with unerring precision. A loud breath of air expelled from her lungs, the wood of the railing digging into Laura's forehead as she rested against it, rain splattering against her forehead. "I told you we'd make it," Arin said. But she didn't answer, only took in the crowded harbor, the waters smooth relative to those of the open sea they'd left behind. During storm season, she knew the majority of merchant vessels remained close to the coast, able to duck into a harbor if dark skies threatened. So heads turned at the sight of a Herendelian ship coming into port, the likely contents of their hold enticing enough for the harbor master to wave them into the docks ahead of the queue, much to the obvious disgust of those captains and crews.
"It's been a long time, you brave bastard,"
the man shouted as the ship bumped against the dock, Jor and several of the others leaping over the rail to secure the vessel. Arin waited until they dropped the gangplank before motioning Lara to follow him down, the rain growing heavier by the minute.
"You say brave, but my grandmother uses quite another word to describe me."
The harbor master laughed.
"Greedy?"
Arin clapped a hand to his chest and staggered sideways.
"You wound me."
They laughed as though they were old friends. Arin extracting a handful of coins and passing them over to the harbor master, then another golden one, which the man slipped into his pocket while his assistant was recording the details on a piece of paper.
"You're well to arrive when you did," the harbor master said. "Steel prices won't hold for long with Ithacana shipping the cursed metal without tax or toll. It's piling up on Southwatch. Not that the Valkatans are giving King Silas much chance to retrieve his prize."
He spat into the water. Arin made a noise of commiseration.
"So I've heard. Ithacana's new queen has done us no favors. All the gold Silas taxed out of our pockets has been spent on steel, and yet we've seen nothing in return.
Beautiful women have a way of costing men money,
Auryn responded. Laura bristled, and the harbormaster's eyes left Auryn to land on her.
Don't much like the way you're looking at me, lad.
Auryn clapped Laura on the shoulder hard enough to make her stagger.
Don't mind my cousin. He's only sour as he spent the entire crossing swabbing the deck rather than lazing about as he's wont to do. Family makes for the worst crew. Don't it just? Was half tempted to chuck him overboard half a dozen times, but to do so would mean I could never go home. More than a few ladies in Vencia would be happy to put you up, I should think.
Don't tempt me.
A fourth plan, which involved sticking a knife deep into Auryn's guts, began to evolve as Laura followed the two men off the docks. The harbormaster's voice dragged her attention back to the conversation.
I've heard Amarid spent the calm season showing the Bridge Kingdom exactly what they thought of Ithacana stealing away the business of supplying Maradrina with Herandelian weapons.
Ithacana isn't supplying weapons.
Laura detected the heat in Auryn's voice, but the harbormaster didn't seem to notice.
Same is same. Shipping them for free. Getting them into our hands. Or would be if Valcata wasn't risking their fleet to keep us from making port.
The bitterness in his voice was palpable.
King Silas should have bargained for cattle.
Cows don't win wars,
Auryn replied.
Neither do half-starved soldiers, or those dead from plague.
The harbormaster spat on the ground.
The only good our princess's marriage has done for Maradrina was line the pockets of the beggars the king paid to sit on the street and cheer her name as she passed.
Auryn and the man turned to the details of offloading the ship. It was nothing but a drone in Laura's ears, as what she'd heard sank deep into her soul. What Saren had told her in his letter about the famine and plague was true. Yet if what this man had said had any verity to it, she'd been much deceived about who was to blame. Sweat rolled in little beads down her back, making her skin itch. It couldn't be true. Auryn had hired this man to say these things. It was all lies intended to trick her. A band of tension wrapped around Laura's chest, every breath a struggle as she attempted to reconcile a lifetime of teaching with what she was seeing, what she was hearing, with what she had done.
Have your crew offload it first thing in the morning. This storm is going to make it next to impossible to do it now.
Laura blinked, focusing on Auryn as he shook the harbormaster's hand, waiting until the man was out of earshot before saying,
Proof enough for you.
Laura didn't answer, pressing a hand to her aching temple, hating how it shook.
Are we going back to the ship now?
No.
There was something in his tone that pulled her from her fugue, water sluiced down the hard angles of Auryn's face, little beads collecting on his dark lashes. His hazel eyes searched hers for a moment. Then he scanned the wharf.
We'll need to wait out the storm in Vencia. Best to do it in a bit of comfort.
Her pulse thudded like a drum in her skull as she walked through the market, following on Auryn's heels, the Ithacanians casually walking around them.
Run!
The word repeated in her head, her feet flexing in her boots, desperate to take her away from this situation. She didn't want to hear any more. She didn't want to face the fact that she might not be a liberator. She might not be a savior. Not even a martyr. She wanted to run from these shards of truth, telling her she was something else entirely. Auryn climbed the narrow switchback streets, two-story buildings crammed together on both sides, windows shuttered against the storm. He stopped in front of a door with a sign that said, The Songbird, over top of it. Music, the clink of glasses, and the collective murmur of dozens of voices seeped onto the street. He hesitated, with one hand on the handle, then pulled open the door with a sigh. The scent of wood smoke, cooking food, and spilled ale washed over Laura, and she took in the common room filled with low tables, most of them taken by merchant-class patrons. Jor and Arryn sat at a table in the corner, the other guards taking places at the bar. Fighting to control the turbulent emotions shifting through her heart, Laura took a seat at Arryn's right, slouching in the chair, and hoping the rain hadn't washed away the dirt completing her disguise. A female voice caught her attention.
"Well, now, look what the cat dragged in."
A young woman, perhaps in her early 20s, had approached the table. She had long hair, a lighter and more golden shade of blonde than Laura's, and a good portion of her generous cleavage was revealed by the low-cut bodice of her dress. Arryn picked up one of the small glasses of amber liquid that a serving girl had brought to the table.
"How are you, Marisol?"
"How am I?"
The woman, Marisol, planted her hands on her hips.
"It's been over a year since you showed your sorry face in Vencia, John, and you ask how I am?"
"Has it been that long?"
"You damn well know it has been."
Arryn lifted his hands in an apology, giving the woman a charming smile that Laura had never seen before on his face. Flirtatious, familiar. The nature of their relationship dawned on Laura, her skin turning hot.
"Circumstances beyond my control, but it's good to see you."
The woman pushed out her bottom lip and gave him a long look. Then she sat on his knee and wrapped an arm around his neck. Laura's fingers twitched toward the knives hidden in her boots, fury bubbling in her veins. What was he thinking, parading his mistress in front of her? Was this some sort of punishment? Was he making a point? The woman then greeted Jor and waved at one of the servers to bring another round. Jor drained his glass, plucking the next from the server before she'd even had a chance to set it down.
"Good to see you, Marisol."
The woman's gaze landed on Laura.
"Who's the sullen one?"
"My cousin. He's learning the trade."
Marisol tilted her pretty head, eyeing Laura as though she were trying to place her face.
"Eyes like that. Your mother must have been dallying with King Silas himself."
Arryn choked on his drink.
"Now wouldn't that be something?"
"You might have more fun if you smiled a bit more, boy. You could learn more from your cousin than how to sail a ship."
Laura gave her a smile that was all teeth, but the woman only laughed, her attention back on Arryn.
"How long are you here?"
"Only until tomorrow, assuming the storm breaks."
Her jaw tightened in obvious disappointment.
"So soon?"
"My presence is required back home."
"That's what you always say."
Marisol exhaled softly, then shook her head.
"You'll be needing rooms for your crew for the night, then, and your cousin?"
Laura's stomach flipped. But not for him. Surely he didn't intend.
"For them, and one for me as well."
One of Marisol's eyebrows rose, and Laura fought the urge to punch her in her pretty little nose. Jor cleared his throat.
"He's gotten himself married off, Marisol."
The woman stood so abruptly that she knocked against the table, sending liquid sloshing out of the glasses. Setting down his drink, Arryn gave Jor a black glare, but the older man only shrugged.
"No sense belaboring the conversation. Now she's been told, so we can get on with business."
Marisol's eyes glittered, and she blinked rapidly.
"Congratulations. I'm sure she's charming."
"She has a temper like wildfire and a sharp tongue to go along with it."
Marisol's gaze shifted to Laura, far too many realizations flashing through her eyes. Rather than staring her down like she wanted to, Laura fixed her attention on a crack in the table.
"I'm sure she's very beautiful."
Arryn was quiet for a moment.
"As beautiful as clear skies over the tempest seas, and equally as elusive."
Laura's stomach flipped as his words registered, a compliment wrapped in a dark truth that she couldn't deny.
"Well, that explains why you're in love with her, then. You've always been enthralled by challenges."
Laura snatched up one of the little glasses and downed the contents, her ears buzzing even as she looked anywhere but at Arryn.
Jor coughed loudly, then waved his arms in the air.
We need a round of drinks over here.
Perhaps more than one. Marisol sat at the table, giving the slightest of nods to the musicians. They set aside the stringed instruments, retrieving drums and tambourines, filling the room with rhythm. Young women dressed in bright-colored dresses danced through the tables, the bracelets of bells around their wrists and ankles jingling as their voices accompanied the music. Moments later, the patrons began to clap, the din making it hard for Laura to hear herself think. Marisol clapped along. There is no evidence the king is building up his fleet in an effort to fight the Valcotton blockade. Not even any sign that he intends to. I have informants up and down the coast, and not a single shipyard boasts a commission from the crown. Laura blinked. This woman was a spy? The prices of imports have skyrocketed. Food is limited to what Maradrina can produce itself, which is little, given all our farmers have been turned to soldiers, and famine is on the rise in the cities. It's only expected to worsen. Arryn clapped along in time to the music.
Amarid isn't picking up the slack. I would have thought they'd be clamoring for the opportunity.
Marisol shook her head. Amaridian soldiers are crying in every port that the alliance between Ithacana and Maradrina has destroyed their incomes. Her eyes flicked back to Arryn. And now that the alliance isn't working out as intended, they seem happy for Maradrina to pay the price.
Vindictive of them.
Marisol took a sip from her drink, then nodded. The support of the Maradrinian people for the conflict with Valcotta had been on the wane for years because no one believed there was anything to be gained from it. But since the wedding and Valcotta's subsequent retaliation, favor for all-out war with Valcotta has grown tenfold. Men and boys both are throwing themselves at army recruiters, fancying themselves the saviors of their people, and... Marisol broke off, casting a quick glance at Laura.
And?
Arryn prompted. And there are a growing number of voices suggesting that the alliance of the 15-year treaty be broken. That while Maradrina starves, Ithacana continues to profit off trade with Valcotta. That if the Bridge Kingdom were truly an ally, they would deny our enemy's port at Southwatch. Lifting one shoulder, Marisol let it fall. The concessions Ithacana granted Maradrina haven't benefited our people in the slightest. But rather than blaming King Silas, they blame Ithacana for the hardship. The people are itching for a fight.
Maradrina will starve before they ever see the benefit of this treaty.
Arryn's words echoed through Laura's skull. How right he'd been. The song ended. The dancers faded back to their other posts, and the musicians chose a more subdued song for their next piece. Marisol stood. I need to get back to work. I'll have food sent over and rooms made up for you and your crew. Her father, Saren, all her masters. They'd lied to Laura and her sisters. That in itself was no great revelation. She'd realized some time ago that Ithacana's villainy had been exaggerated and expounded upon in order to turn the girls into fundamentalists with one clear goal, the destruction of Maradrina's oppressor. But until this precise moment, she had believed that while her father's methods had been vile, his motivation had been pure. To save Maradrina's people, to feed them and protect them. Except Ithacana wasn't the oppressor. Her father was. Laura and her sisters hadn't been isolated in the desert compound for their safety. They hadn't even been kept there to conceal her father's plans from Ithacana, not really. It had been to keep Laura and her sisters from the truth. Because if they'd known that their mission was driven not by the need to right a wrong, but by their father's endless greed, how willing would any of them have been to betray a husband, to tear apart a nation, to see a people slaughtered? Promises and threats and bribes were paltry motivators,
compared to the fanaticism that had been burned into her and her sister's souls. But for Laura, that fanaticism burned no longer.
Why are we here? Jor motioned for one of the girls to bring another round of drinks. What are we risking wild seas and enemy territory for? Pushing his food around on the plate in front of him, Auron didn't answer. Laura had gone upstairs to their room an hour ago, silent, her face pale. He'd told her to remain there until he returned for her own safety. He had no expectations that she'd listen. He'd known. Standing in the water with her next to Snake Island, he'd known. All the little peculiarities about his Maradrinian wife, the little things that had struck him as odd, had accumulated until there was no denying it. Laura was a spy. The woman he'd goddamned fallen in love with was a spy. In the early days of their marriage, he'd believed Laura's apparent disdain for him was driven by her discomfort of being forced into a marriage that she didn't want, a life she hadn't chosen. But the shock on her face when he told her that her father had been given the chance to feed his starving people and had bought weapons instead signaled she'd been lied to, on top of everything else. Auron employed enough spies of his own to know the best of them believed that the work they did was for a greater good. The Rat King would be hard-pressed to find a spy who believed Ithacana was the cause of Maradrina's plight, so he'd created one, raised a daughter in total isolation to implant a false sense of righteousness. Except now she knew the truth. Auron? Jor's voice was unconcerned, but Auron had never heard the captain of his guard slip on a pseudonym, particularly that of his king. The older man was worried, and rightly so. Ithacana was caught between a rock and a very hard place. Before Auron had a chance to answer, one of his crew stepped inside the tavern and nodded once. Auron's heart sank. You're about to find out. Outside, his guard reported, She's walking up the main boulevard. Gorik is tailing her. He handed Auron his bow and quiver. Auron took the weapons without comment and started up the street, Jor on his heels. Vencia was crowded, as always, and it took him a bit to find the tall Ithacanian tailing his wife. Go back, he muttered to Gorik once he had Laura in his sights. We'll take it from here. The man opened his mouth to argue, then saw the expression on Auron's face and faded into the crowd. Laura strode up the center of the street, still wearing her disguise, which meant the drunks and rabble-rousers left her alone. Yet as they tailed her, he wondered how the disguise fooled anyone at all. Every time she turned her head to regard something that had caught her interest, torchlight framed the delicate lines of her face, her full lips, the long column of her neck, the rounded curve of her ass. The slight sway to her step. No Herendelian shipboy he'd ever met walked like that. She was so painfully beautiful, and even knowing that she'd used it against him didn't lessen how powerfully he was drawn to her. He silently pleaded, Please let me be wrong about what you intend to do. But there was no denying the route Laura was taking, up the switchback streets in the direction of her father's palace, that blue and bronze testament to hubris and greed. Jor cursed as he too realized which way Laura was going. We need to stop her. Auron sidestepped a drunken pair and moved into the shadows closer to the buildings. Not yet. The further they climbed, the fewer people filled the street, but Laura hadn't once looked back, as though it hadn't even occurred to her that he might have her watched. What are you doing, Auron? Jor hissed. I need to see if she'll betray me if given the chance. But what he hoped was that the truth had turned her, that, now awake to her father's deception, she'd turn her back on whatever purpose she'd been set to. If she was the sort of woman he believed, no, prayed her to be. She kept walking toward the gate, the guards flanking it, regarding her with bored interest, a lone youth of no concern to them. Auron stopped in the shadows where the guards wouldn't see him, pulling a single arrow from his quiver. The bow was his own, but the wood felt strange and unfamiliar beneath his sweating fingers. Jor reached for his weapon. Let me do this for you. Aran stepped sideways, knocking the arrow as he shook his head. No. I brought her into Ithacana. She's my responsibility. Laura wasn't slowing, and the guards at the gate perked up as she approached. One of the guards called out to her. What are you about, boy? Laura didn't answer. Again, Jor tried to take the weapon. You're half in love with the girl. You don't need this on your conscience. Yes, I do. She stopped a dozen paces from the heavy iron gates. State your purpose or be on your way, the guard shouted. Aran slowly drew the bow, aiming the arrow at the center of her slender back. At this range, it would punch straight through her heart. She'd be dead before she could damn him, and Ithacana more than she already had. Aran's heart was wild and frantic in his chest, hot sweat mixing with the rain running down his back. As he blinked, he saw her fall, saw her blood spill out in a pool around her, saw those cursedly beautiful eyes of hers lose their spark. Then he blinked again, and she was standing motionless in the darkness. She took a hesitant step forward. His arm quivered. Another step. The bowstring dug into his fingers as he slowly began to straighten them, knowing that despite having no choice, he'd never forgive himself for killing her. Her body rocked, and his heart skipped. Then lightning flashed, and Laura whirled, sprinting away from the gates. Jor jerked Aran deeper into the shadows as she passed, heading back into the city. He took a step to follow before everything he'd eaten for dinner rose in his throat. Bracing a hand against the wall of the building, Aran puked his guts out onto the street. Follow her, he managed to get out. Make sure she gets back safe. Only when Jor had disappeared down the street did Aran rest his head against the slimy, wet stone. A half a second. That had been the difference between her running into the night and her lying dead on the street. Half a second. The stench of vomit filled his nose, but that wasn't what made his eyes burn. He scrubbed at them furiously, hating the king of Maradrina to the depths of his soul. The alliance between Maradrina and Ithacana made mockery of the word, for it felt Aran had no greater enemy than Silas Veliant. You, someone shouted, no loitering, get on your way. Casting one backward glance at the palace where Laura's father slept, Aran melted into the night.
Whiskey. Laura eased onto a stool back at the Songbird, water dripping from her clothing to pool on the floor beneath her. The barkeep eyed her with amusement.
Can you pay, boy?
No. I intend to drink it and then run out the back. The amusement in his eyes fled, and he leaned over the bar.
Listen, you little...
Darling, can you bring up some more wine from the cellar? Marisol appeared from nowhere. I'll handle this. Shrugging, the barkeep strode toward an open door behind the bar. Once he was gone, Marisol pulled a bottle from beneath the bar and poured a generous measure into a glass, which she pushed in front of Laura. I don't know how they do things in Harrendell, but I'm not in the habit of getting children drunk in my establishment. Laura gave her a cold stare, drained the glass, then pushed it back in front of the other woman. Then she reached into her pocket and retrieved a gold Harrendellian coin and slammed it on the bar. Make an exception. One eyebrow rose. You're a charmer, aren't you, Your Majesty? Do you bestow titles on all your patrons? Only on women with eyes of Veliant blue, who travel in the company of Ithacanian spies. There seemed to be little point in trying to dissuade her. Either pour and talk at the same time or shut up. I'm in no mood. No mood for anything but to silence the thousand questions that spun wild through her thoughts as she tried to come to terms with a world that seemed upside down. And certainly in no mood to make small talk with Aran's former lover. Marisol poured and then set the bottle down next to the glass.
I saw you when you passed through Vencia on your way to Ithacana.
She rested her elbows on the polished wood.
The curtain was pulled back in the carriage, and I caught just a glimpse. You looked like you were going to war, not to be married.
Laura had been going to war, or so she'd thought at the time.
The king ordered the streets cleared. No one was allowed out of their homes until you boarded the ship. For your protection, they said.
It had nothing to do with her protection. It was one last step to ensure Laura boarded the ship, convinced that Marjorina was in the direst of straits and that Ithacana was to blame. One last piece of deception.
Then they loaded you onto the ship and you were gone, off to Ithacana and off, unbeknownst to me at the time, to steal away my favorite lover.
Laura gave her a sweet smile. Given you hadn't seen him in over a year, I'm not sure you had much claim to him at that point, if ever.
You are quite the little bitch, aren't you?
Laura plucked the glass Marisol was polishing from her hands, filled it, waited for the other woman to raise it, then clinked hers against it.
Cheers to that.
Swallowing the liquid in one mouthful, Marisol set aside the glass.
We expected things to change, for your father to ease his filthy taxes, or at least to use the money for something better than his ceaseless war with Valcata.
But nothing changed.
Marisol shook her head. If anything, it's only gotten worse. Makes one wonder why I bothered going.
Except Laura knew exactly why she'd gone to Ithacana, to save her sisters, to save her kingdom, to save herself. In this precise moment, she half wondered if she'd damned them all.
Not your choice, I suppose.
Marisol's eyes drifted over Laura's shoulder, taking in the comings and goings of the common room.
What I do know is that you married the best man I've ever had the privilege to meet. So, perhaps instead of drowning your sorrows, you ought to consider a better use of your time.
She inclined her head.
Either way, I hope you enjoy your evening, Your Majesty.
Good night. Laura refilled her glass. She knew Arryn was a good man. Her instincts, which she should have trusted, had been screaming it at her for longer than she'd cared to admit. But she'd ignored them in favor of what she'd been told. She'd been duped. She'd been manipulated. She'd been played. She'd gone to the palace to kill her father. Her plan had been to use the code she'd been given to gain access, wait for them to bring her to her father, then kill him. With her bare hands if she needed to. It wasn't as though she hadn't been trained to do it. They'd kill her afterward. But his death would be worth it. Worth that moment when her father realized that she, his prized weapon, had turned on him instead. But as Laura had stood there in the pouring rain, her father's soldiers watching her with bored interest, Master Eric's voice had filled her ears.
Do not let your temper get the better of you, little cockroach, for when you do, you risk your enemies getting the better of you.
It would be one thing if her loss of temper only cost her. But as she stood there, skin prickling with some sixth sense warning her of danger, it occurred to Laura that it would be Ithacana. And Arryn, who would pay the price? The sheets of paper in Arryn's rooms at midwatch still bore all of the bridge's secrets. If even one of them reached Saren's hands, that was damage that could never be undone. She needed to ensure they were destroyed. Once that was accomplished, she could turn to vengeance with a clear conscience. She'd returned, intending to leave Arryn a note explaining everything and instructing him to destroy the papers. But the vision of Arryn's face, when he read it, kept spinning across her thoughts. He, who was loyal to his very core, would take her act of disloyalty personally. He'd hate her. Laura swallowed the contents of her glass in big gulps, wishing the alcohol would work faster, wishing it would numb her traitorous heart. Filling her glass again and again, she ruminated until the bottle was empty, the whiskey doing nothing to numb the dull ache in her chest. She would have ordered another and kept on drinking, but there was no one left to serve her. All the bottles and glassware put away for the night. the room silent and still. Rising to her feet, Laura turned to discover the common room empty of patrons and staff, chairs pushed into tables, floors swept, and doors latched. Devoid of life. Except for Arin, who sat at the table behind her. She stared blearily at him, her heart feeling as though it had been torn into 1,000 pieces and then set aflame.
"Waiting for me to go to bed so you can go find Marisol?"
The words were slurred, spiteful. But she almost wished he'd do it, if for no other reason than it would give her a valid reason to hate him. A valid reason to leave and never look back. The corner of his mouth turned up.
"Who do you think came to find me to deal with my shit-mouthed little cousin?"
Laura made a face.
"She knows I'm not your cousin. She knows exactly who I am, and by extension, who you are."
"Clever Marisol."
"You aren't concerned?"
Arin shook his head, then rose to his feet. His clothes were wet, but whatever rainwater he'd tracked in had long since dried. How long had he been sitting there?
"She's been spying for Ithacana for almost a decade. Since your father hung hers and then spiked his head on Vencia's gates. She's loyal."
Jealous words danced on Laura's tongue, but she swallowed them.
"She's beautiful and kind."
"Yes."
His gaze was intense.
"But she's not you."
Her body swayed, the room spinning. Arin closed the distance between them in two strides, hands catching her sides, steadying her. Laura closed her eyes to try to stop the spinning, but the rotating room was replaced with the memory of his hard, muscled body, his tanned skin beneath her fingers. Heat blossomed low in her belly. "You can't," she told herself. "You're a liar and a traitor. You aren't the woman he believes you to be, and you never can be. You can never be yourself."
Not without risking him discovering the truth. If she couldn't find the courage to tell him the truth, then she needed to get back to Ithacana to destroy all evidence of her betrayal, and then disappear, fake her death, return to Maradrina for vengeance, and never see Arin again. Her eyes burned, her breath threatening to catch in a sob and betray her.
"Are you all right?"
She clenched her teeth.
"I don't feel well."
"Not surprising, given the amount you drank. You have a royal's taste, by the way. That's not a cheap bottle."
"Paid for it myself."
She said the words slowly in an attempt to make them clearer.
"You mean with the coins you stole from my ship?"
"If you're stupid enough to leave them lying around, you deserve to lose them."
"I'm sorry, I didn't catch that through all the slurring."
"Asshole."
"Can you walk?"
"Yes."
Untangling herself from his grip, she staggered toward the stairs, when all of a sudden the bottom step was flying up to meet her. But before Laura's face could slam against the wood, Arin caught hold of her, swinging her up into his arms.
"Let's not tempt fate."
"Just need water."
"You need a pillow. Maybe you'll get lucky and the storm will linger long enough for you to sleep this off. But I doubt it."
Laura made an angry sound against his chest, but it was more for herself, at the ease with which she curled against him, at how appealing a few more nights with him would be, despite knowing that it was only delaying the inevitable.
"Did the whiskey help?"
"No."
"It's never helped me much either."
A tear leaked onto her cheek, and she turned her face into his chest to hide it.
"I'm sorry I've been so terrible. You deserve someone better than me."
Arin exhaled a long breath, but said nothing. The methodical movement of him climbing the stairs lulled her, consciousness slowly fading away. She didn't fight it, because against all the odds, she trusted him implicitly. Still, she was aware enough to hear him, his voice hoarse as he said,
"Since the moment I set eyes on you in Southwatch, there's been no one but you. Even if I'm a goddamned fool for it, there will never be anyone but you.
You are a fool, she thought, as darkness took her. And that made two of them.
He'd never been able to sleep past dawn on a clear day. How his sleeping body knew the winds had died and the rain ceased was a mystery. A sixth sense from a lifetime in Ithacana that warned him when the tempest seas lowered their guard and that it was time to raise his. So when his eyes snapped open with the faintest glow on the horizon, Arin rose from where he'd slept on the floor, dressed silently so as not to disturb Lara, who was still faintly snoring into her pillow, then ventured downstairs for something to eat. It was as though a burden had lifted from his shoulders. Coming to Ventzia was always a risk, but it had been a thousandfold more so with Lara in tow. Yet it had been worth it. Worth having her discover the truth of the circumstances and Maradrina with her own eyes and ears. Having her understand that it was her father, not Ithacana, who was the oppressor of her homeland. Having Lara finally see with eyes unclouded by whatever bullshit her ears had been filled with over the years. Those things had been worth the risk that she'd turn on him and spill every cursed secret she'd learned. Worth those torturous moments when Arin had believed he'd have to stop her. Worth the moment when Arin became certain that her allegiance had, if not entirely turned to Ithacana, at least abandoned his enemy. That she'd made that choice had been clear in the time he'd watched her sitting at the bar, drinking whiskey like her life depended on it. Arin knew his wife well enough to tell when she was pissed off, that silent, simmering burn that caused any sane individual to give her a wide berth, whether they realized it or not. Last night she'd been furious, but for the first time it wasn't at him. No. When she'd turned around and saw him, her anger had been vanquished by another emotion entirely, one that he'd been desperate to see in her eyes for longer than he cared to admit. Down in the common room, Jor was seated with Gorik, but Arin only gave them a nod and took a seat in the corner by himself, content to watch the comings and goings while sipping the coffee that Marisol brought him. His friend and former lover, too busy with the rush to do more than squeeze his shoulder in passing. The room was half filled with traveling merchants. Some wore the clear gaze of those keen to make a profit once the markets opened. Others wore the blurry eyes and green faces of those who'd enjoyed a night out in Ventzia and were awake only because they feared their master's wrath. Arin had far more in common with the latter group. Since he was 15, he'd been venturing out of Ithacana. Ostensibly, it was to spy, to learn the ways of his kingdom's pseudo-allies and clear-cut enemies, but there was no denying that he also used the trips to step away from the ceaseless burdens that came with his title. Ventzia had always been his favorite, and he'd rode out a dozen or more typhoons drinking and gambling and laughing in one common room or another, more often than not with a local girl to warm his bed. No one believing him to be anything other than a son of a successful merchant. While the kingdom of Maradrina was a thorn in Ithacana's backside, the Maradrinian people had long been friends to Arin, which created a certain conflict. He was not supposed to like them, but he did. Liked how they haggled and argued about every damned thing, how they were brash and brave, even the most cowardly of them prone to picking fistfights to defend a friend's honor, how they sang and laughed and lived, every one of them with grand ambitions for more. Ventzia itself was a beautiful place, a hillside of whitewashed buildings with blue roofs that always seemed to gleam as he approached from the sea, its streets thrumming with people hailing from every nation, north and south. A metropolis that thrived despite its king, who ruled with an iron fist and who used taxes to all but plunder his own people. No, if Maradrina found itself a new ruler and Arin wasn't the king of his own kingdom, he'd be happy to make a life in Ventzia. Sometimes he wondered if that was half of what his council feared about opening up Ithacana's borders and allowing its citizens to leave, that they'd see how bloody easy life was in other kingdoms and never come back, that Ithacana wouldn't be conquered, but rather slowly fade from existence. Except he didn't think that was how it would go. There was something about the wild thrill of living in Ithacana that spoke to the souls of those born to it, and neither people nor kingdom would ever willingly let each other go. Auron's thoughts were interrupted by a shadow falling across his table.
Good morning, Your Grace. I hope you'll forgive me interrupting your breakfast.
Auron's fork hesitated halfway to his mouth, and it took a great deal of effort to swallow his mouthful of eggs. He lifted his head. I've been called a great many things in this room, but never that. The magpie gave a thin smile and took the seat across from Auron.
I appreciate the game as much as anyone, Your Grace, but perhaps we might forego the pretense that you are anyone other than the King of Ithacana.
His smile grew.
For expedience's sake.
Auron set down his fork and leaned back in his chair. Out of the corner of his eye, he saw Jor and Gorik lift their heads, Saren's face deeply familiar to them. But they'd only seen Maradrina's spymaster from afar, because never, never had their cover been compromised. Every Ithacanian spy knew going into enemy territory that if they were caught, they should fall on their own sword before giving up their kingdom's secrets, and Auron had no doubt that everyone with him would do just that. Except, perhaps, for the woman upstairs.
It's the scar on your hand that gave you away.
Saren jerked his chin toward Auron's left hand, which rested on the table, the curved white scar from an old knife fight clearly visible.
Along with the mask, you always wore gloves when you met with outsiders, but not at your wedding, which of course I was in attendance for. Such a dramatic ceremony it was.
Gorik stood, yawning, then strolled over to the bar as though to sweet-talk Marisol. His friend smiled and laughed as she polished the glass she was holding, but a heartbeat later, she disappeared from the room. To find Terran, who'd secure Lara. If that was even a possibility. God, he was a fool for lowering his guard, for believing that it had ended last night when Lara hadn't gone into the palace. Perhaps that had only been a ruse, and even now, his Maradrinian wife was spilling out everything she'd learned to her father's lackeys.
Not like you Ithacanians to make a mistake.
Saren lifted his hand to get a servant girl's attention.
We, of course, suspected that you paid our shores visits from time to time, but not until now did you so blatantly announce your arrival.
Auron's eyebrow rose.
It was the steel, you see. It was marked at Northwatch for transport through the bridge over a year ago, and yet the load somehow arrived in Ventzia only yesterday, offloaded only this very morning, and via a ship claiming to have come from Herondale, not from a Southwatch ferry.
Fuck. Anna was going to kill him if he managed to survive this.
I'd suggest that it was a beginner mistake, but this isn't your first visit to Ventzia, is it, Your Grace?
Saren accepted a coffee from one of Marisol's girls.
You seem far too comfortable for it to be your first time.
Auron picked up his cup, eyeing the spymaster. I've always had a fondness for Ventzia. Plenty of attractive women. Saren gave an amused sniff.
I would have thought those days would be behind you now that you're a married man.
Perhaps they would be if you hadn't sent me such a harridan. The coffee in Saren's cup quivered, and the tiny man set it down swiftly to hide the reaction. Apparently, Lara had not stuck to the spymaster's plan in her methods of seduction, which was probably a good thing, because Auron suspected he and Saren had quite different tastes when it came to women.
We could send you another, perhaps one with a kinder, gentler disposition.
Saren's eyes flicked to Marisol.
I see you have a fondness for blondes. I can think of just the princess for you. She was my first choice, but fate conspired against me. Against both of us, it would appear.
Auron's curiosity over why Lara had been chosen flared once again before being pushed aside by concern for his friend. Marisol had been linked to him. That meant she was in danger. Tempting. Unfortunately, such practices are frowned upon by my people. I'll have to content myself with what you sent me.
Speaking of Lara, how is she? It's been some time since we received word from her, and her father has grown concerned.
Auron's mind raced. If the steel hadn't been unloaded and processed until this morning, it was possible they'd only been under the magpie's scrutiny for a matter of hours, all of which Laura had spent passed out in a bed upstairs. Alternatively, this could be a ruse to distract Auron while the Maradrenians secured their princess. She's well enough?
Her father would like some proof of that.
When I return home, I'll suggest you put pen to paper. But I must warn you, Laura isn't the most obedient of wives. She's more likely to tell me to shove both pen and paper up my ass.
Saren's brow crinkled.
Perhaps remind her of her father's enduring concern for her welfare.
Auron rested his elbows on the table. Cut the shit, Magpie. We both know your master cares nothing for his daughter. He got what he wanted, which was free trade on steel and weapons. So what else is it you're after? Waving his hand as though to dispel the tension, Saren gave him an apologetic smile.
Appearances must be maintained, you understand. Frankly, you can slit the little bitch's throat and my master would care not. What he does care about is your commitment to the alliance between our kingdoms.
He has his steel as per our agreement. What more does he feel he deserves? A sage nod.
It's true you've held to the letter of the agreement, as have we. What I'm referring to is more the spirit of the agreement. The treaty was for an alliance of peace between Ithacana and Maradrina, and yet you continue to host and trade with our greatest enemy in your market at Southwatch, allowing them to purchase the goods Maradrina so desperately needs. My master asks that you reconsider this practice.
You want me to cut ties with Valcata? Cut ties with the kingdom that provided close to a third of the bridge's revenues every year? Valcata was no ally, but neither were they Ithacana's sworn enemy the way Maradrina had been in the past. Yet if Auron did what Saren was asking, I've no interest in going to war against Valcata.
Nor is my master asking you to.
Saren slid an embossed silver cylinder across the table, the lacquered seal, Maradrenian blue.
He merely requests that you cease supplying them in their war against us.
They'll retaliate and war will be on my doorstep whether I asked for it or not.
Perhaps,
Saren took a mouthful of his coffee.
But if Valcata attacks your lands, rest assured that Maradrina will retaliate against them tenfold. We do not take kindly to those who interfere with our friends and allies.
Words of support, but Auron heard the threat beneath them. Do as my master says, or face the consequences.
Think on it, Your Grace.
Saren rose to his feet.
My master looks forward to your written response detailing your commitment to our friendship.
The thin smile returned.
Safe travels back to your homeland, and please, do give Laura my regards.
Without another word, the spymaster of Maradrina left the common room, the door slamming shut in his wake. Picking up the message tube, Auron quickly scanned the contents before shoving it into the bag by his feet, then met Jor's eyes from across the room. Time to go.
Laura woke just before dawn, a blanket covering her from toe to chin, a glass of water sitting on the bedside table and her head throbbing with the worst headache of her life. Moaning, she rolled over to bury her face in the pillow. The events of the prior night were hazy, but she remembered them well enough for her cheeks to burn as she recalled Auron catching her before she could fall smack on her face. The way she'd curled into his arms as he'd carried her up the stairs, the things she'd said, the things he'd said. Sitting upright, Laura eyed her boy's clothes, which she'd slept in, the boots sitting on the floor next to her bed, the only garment that Auron had removed from her after she'd passed out. Her knives. Looking around frantically, Laura threw the pillows onto the floor, her heart settling and a faint smile rising to her lips as she saw the blades resting there. Apparently, Auron had noticed more of her habits than she'd realized. Picking up the water, she opened the shuttered windows and looked outside. Clear skies and only a light breeze,
ruffling the laundry hanging from the line across the street. They could go home today. Home. Shaking her head sharply at the slip, Laura drained the glass in several long gulps and pulled on her boots. The room was decidedly devoid of dirt, so she used a bit of soot from the lamp to complete her disguise before shoving her few belongings into her bag and stepping out into the hallway. To find herself face to face with half of Auron's guard.
"What's going on?"
she asked Taryn, who looked strange in the simple dress she wore as disguise. "Weather's going to turn. Time to go." She was lying. There were very few things that put fear into the eyes of the Ethiconians, and the promise of a storm certainly wasn't one of them. Downstairs was already busy with the early rising merchant class who were breaking their fast, but her eyes immediately found Auron sitting at the bar. Behind it stood Marisol, who, for once, wasn't polishing a glass, her focus entirely on the man in front of her. Laura's jaw tightened, but her jealousy fled as she remembered Auron's words.
"There will never be anyone but you."
Except with all the lies she'd told, all the ways she'd manipulated him. How could she stay with him? As Laura stood frozen in the entrance to the common room, Auron turned and caught sight of her. What looked like relief spread across his face. With a final word to Marisol, he dumped a handful of coins on the bar. Something was very wrong. He strode across the room.
"Finally decided to show yourself, cousin? Barely going to have enough time to make the run to Southwatch as it is without waiting on your primping."
She glowered at him because other patrons were watching, but once he was within arm's reach, he muttered,
"We've been compromised. We need to go."
Jor and the rest of the Ithaconians were outside, leaning against the wall with false nonchalance. Despite their apparel, no one with half an eye would believe them sailors. They were too alert, and not one of them appeared hungover, unlike her.
"Don't want to miss the tide," Auron announced, and immediately they were on the move.
In the harbor, they wove through the crowd at a near run, down to the wharf and onto the dock where their vessel was moored. The Ithaconians who'd remained with the ship were already scurrying about on the deck, readying to set sail, readying to flee. Laura's focus sharpened, and she scanned the docks and crowds for any sign of pursuit. Auron had said their cover had been compromised, but there were levels to that statement. If the Maradrenians had discovered they were from Ithacana, that was one thing. If they'd discovered Auron's identity, or worse, Laura's, then they were in serious trouble.
"You're mad, John."
The harbor master's paunch shook as he scuttled toward them.
"There's a storm brewing."
Auron paused at the base of a gangplank, using one hand to push Laura up it.
"Nothing but a squall. It will keep the Valcottons off my heels." "Insanity. I'll keep a space open for you. We'll be back before lunch. You can buy me a drink or two on my return." "More likely that I'll be toasting your memory."
Auron's laugh cut off abruptly. Her hackles rising, Laura turned from her inspection of the darkness swirling in the east to find Saren, standing a dozen paces or so behind the harbor master, his arms crossed behind his back, watching. The ship rocked on a swell, and Laura staggered, her shoulders colliding with Auron's chest, his arm reflexively wrapping around her to catch her balance, holding her against him. Saren's eyes widened. "Go," she whispered, seeing the realization dawning on the spymaster's face. Realization that her presence in Maradrina meant she knew the truth. That the gambit, 15 years in the making, had played itself out too soon. The realization that if Laura made it out of this harbor, so would any chance of her father ever taking the bridge.
"Go,"
she screamed.
"Raise the sails,"
Auron roared. The Ithaconians surged into action, and in a heartbeat the ship was drifting away from the dock, the gangplank landing in the water with a splash. Auron dragged her with him as he raced to the helm, shouting orders even as swarms of soldiers descended upon them.
"Hurry!"
The gap between ship and dock was widening, but not swiftly enough. "Auron, I can't let them take me alive!" Laura pulled one of her knives from her boot.
Don't make me talk. He caught sight of her knife, realizing her intentions.
Put it away, Laura. I won't let them take you.
But... He tore the jeweled blade from her hand and threw it, the weapon flipping end over end to land on the